Chapter 93. Assurance that he was contented for her to go away, and yet there remained an uneasy feeling in his mind that he had not said quite the right thing, that, somehow, Dinah had not understood him. Dinah must have risen a little before the sun the next morning, for she was downstairs about 5 o'clock. So was Seth, for, through Lisbeth's obstinate refusal to have any woman helper in the house, he had learned to make himself, as Adam said, very handy in the housework, that he might save his mother from too great weariness. On which ground I hope you will not think him unmanly, any more than you can have thought the gallant Colonel Bath unmanly, when he made the gruel for his invalid sister. Adam, who had sat up late at his writing, was still asleep, and was not likely, Seth said, to be down till breakfast time. Often as Dinah had visited Lisbeth during the last 18 months, as he had never slept in the cottage since that night after Thiah's death, when, you remember, Lisbeth praised her deft movements, and even gave a modified approval to her porridge. But in that long interval Dinah had made great advances in household cleverness, and this morning, since Seth was there to help, she was bent on bringing everything to a pitch of cleanliness and order that would have satisfied her and Poyser. The cottage was far from that standard at present, for Lisbeth's rheumatism had forced her to give up her old habits of dilettante scouring and polishing. When the kitchen was to her mind, Dinah went into the new room, where Adam had been writing the night before, to see what sweeping and dusting were needed there. She opened the window, and let in the fresh morning air, and the smell of the sweet briar, and the bright low slanting rays of the early sun, which made a glory about her pale face, and pale auburn hair as she held the long brush, and swept, singing to herself in a very low tone like a sweet summer murmur, that you have to listen for very closely, one of Charles Wesley's hymns. Eternal beam of light divine, fountain of unexhausted love, in whom the Father's glories shine, through earth beneath and heaven above. Jesus, the weary wanderer's rest, give me thy easy yoke to bear. With steadfast patience arm my breast, with spotless love and holy fear. Speak to my warring passions, peace. Say to my trembling heart, be still. Thy power my strength and fortress is, for all things serve thy sovereign will. She laid by the brush, and took up the duster, and if you had ever lived in Mrs. Poyser's household, you would know how the duster behaved in Dinah's hand, how it went into every small corner, and on every ledge in, and out of sight, how it went again and again round every bar of the chairs, and every leg, and under and over everything that lay on the table, till it came to Adam's papers, and rulers and the open desk near them. Dinah dusted up to the very edge of these and then hesitated, looking at them with a longing but timid eye. It was painful to see how much dust there was among them. As she was looking in this way, she heard Seth's step just outside the open door, towards which her back was turned, and said, raising her clear treble, Seth, is your brother wrathful when his papers are stirred? Yes, very, when they are not put back in the right places, said a deep strong voice, not Seth's. It was as if Dinah had put her hands unawares on a vibrating cord. She was shaken with an intense thrill, and for the instant felt nothing else. Then she knew her cheeks were glowing, and dared not look round, but stood still, distressed because she could not say good morning in a friendly way. Adam, finding that she did not look round so as to see the smile on his face, was afraid as he had thought him serious about his wrathfulness, and went up to her, so that she was obliged to look at him. What? You think I'm a cross fellow at home, Dinah? He said, smilingly. Nay, said Dinah, looking up with timid eyes, not so. But you might be put about by finding things meddled with. And even the man Moses, the meekest of men, was wrathful sometimes. Come, then, said Adam, looking at her affectionately, I'll help you move the things, and put them back again, and then they can't get wrong. You're getting to be your aunt's own niece, I see, for particularness. They began their little task together, but Dinah had not recovered herself sufficiently to think of any remark, and Adam looked at her uneasily. Dinah, he thought, had seemed to disapprove him somehow lately, as he had not been so kind and open to him as she used to be. He wanted her to look at him and be as pleased as he was himself with doing this bit of playful work. But Dinah did not look at him. It was easy for her to avoid looking at the tall man, and when at last there was no more dusting to be done, and no further excuse for him to linger near her, he could bear it no longer, and said, in rather a pleading tone, Dinah, you're not displeased with me for anything, are you? I've not said or done anything to make you think ill of me. The question surprised her, and relieved her by giving a new course to her feeling. She looked up at him now, quite earnestly, almost with the tears coming, and said, oh, no, Adam, how could you think so? I couldn't bear you, not to feel as much a friend to me as I do to you, said Adam. Andy, you don't know the value I set on the very thought of you, Dinah. That was what I meant yesterday, when I said I'd be content for you to go, if you thought right. I meant, the thought of you was worth so much to me, I should feel I ought to be thankful, and not grumble, if you see right to go away. You know I do mind parting with you, Dinah? Yes, dear friend, said Dinah, trembling, but trying to speak calmly, I know you have a brother's heart towards me, and we shall often be with one another in spirit, but at this season I am in heaviness through manifold temptations. You must not mark me. I feel called to leave my kindred for a while, but it is a trial the flesh is weak. Adam saw that it pained her to be obliged to answer. I hurt you by talking about it, Dinah, he said. I'll say no more. Let's see if Seth's ready with breakfast now. That is a simple scene, reader. But it is almost certain that you two have been in love perhaps, even, more than once, though you may not choose to say so to all your feminine friends. If so, you will no more think the slight words, the timid looks, the tremulous touches, by which two human souls approach each other gradually, like two little quivering rain streams, before they mingle into one, you will no more think these things trivial than you will think the first detected signs of coming spring trivial, though they be but a faint indescribable something in the air, and in the song of the birds, and the tiniest perceptible budding on the hedgerow branches. Those slight words and looks and touches are part of the soul's language, and the finest language, I believe, is chiefly made up of unimposing words, such as it, sound, stars, comma, music, words really not worth looking at, or hearing, in themselves, any more than hips or oddest. It is only that they happen to be the signs of something unspeakably great and beautiful. I am of opinion that love is a great and beautiful thing too, and if you agree with me, the smallest signs of it will not be chips and sawdust to you. They will rather be like those little words, light and music, stirring the long winding fibers of your memory and enriching your present with your most precious past. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.